Coming Friday, November 14th, and Saturday, November 15th, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. from 10 in the morning Central Time on November 14th through 10 in the morning Central Time on November 15th. This year's theme, Myths About Lutheranism. Issues Etc. 24, Friday, November 14th, and Saturday, November 15th. Listen live at issuesetc.org.
This world's a treasure. It's been telling us to leave for a while now.
Your daughter's generation will be the last to survive on Earth. You're the best pilot we ever had. Get out there and save the world.
Everybody ready to say goodbye to our solar system?
To our galaxy.
Here we go.
It's a little bit of the trailer of a much heralded movie, a sci-fi, well, it's not a thriller. Well, it is kind of a thriller, apparently. Interstellar, starring Matthew McConaughey. It struggles with a lot of big questions, the survival of humanity, our quest to find a new home, evil, selfishness, love, selflessness. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 12th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to review the movie Interstellar with Pastor Ted Giese here in the first half hour of the program. A little bit later, Pastor Will Wheaton will be our guest. We're going to remember 6th century Christian ruler and confessor of Christ, Justinian. And then Bobby Ross Jr. will join us. We'll talk about media coverage of several stories, a new Mormon essay about Joseph Smith's multiple wives, Cincinnati area pizza cafe run by a Christian couple, and Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal's silence about the Pope's recent comments on evolution. We'll cover all that with Bobby Ross of GetReligion.org a little bit later in the program. Joining us to review the movie Interstellar, Pastor Ted Giese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he's taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
You say that the sci-fi thriller deals with some very basic, very deep themes, among them evil and love. How so?
It comes up all over the place in the movie. I think they talk about it, actually specifically talk about those ideas in the course of the film, too. And there's a real reason why it's all in there. Is this movie is really kind of underpinned by theoretical physics. And theoretical physics doesn't really make good drama until you apply it to humans. So like you said in the intro, you know, like the problem is they need to get off the Earth to find somewhere new to populate. And by going into outer space, now they're getting into the realm of theoretical physics. So two of the things that they're kind of struggling with is what are they going to experience when they get there? Some people have gone ahead, but, you know, there's a couple spots where they talk about love and evil. So in the case of evil, when they talk about it, the one character, the daughter of a theoretical physicist within the film, this Professor Brandt, his daughter is an astronaut on this trip, and she thinks that, you know, there's nothing in nature that's evil, and that the only evil that they would experience when they get out into space is whatever evil they as humans bring with them. So there's kind of two interesting things going on there. The first thing is that, you know, she admits that, you know, nature can be frightening and dangerous, but that there's no evil in it. So the Christian listening to that would think to themselves, well, the creation, the universe, everything has fallen into sin. You know, so that's a little bit of an odd thing. But then when she says that the only evil you take with you out there is the evil that humanity takes with them, that starts to sound like original sin, and that's pretty interesting. So when it comes to love, then it's a little bit different. There's another kind of quality, and the same character is kind of dealing with both things.
So without giving too much away, because there's a lot to give away, and you say that, you know, to enjoy this movie, you need to know as little about it as possible going in. And yeah. So I don't want to ruin it for myself or anybody else. But how would you describe the basic plot, the basic story that it is telling? All sci-fi has, you know, the advantage of our suspended disbelief in order to tell fantastical stories. What's that story in the case of Interstellar?
Just in a nutshell, what you get is in the distant future, but not too distant, you have a blight that's killing crops and basically causing extinction of various kinds of crops. So one of the last crops left that they can grow is corn. And the idea is that the world just doesn't have the food necessary to support its population, and they've experienced this massive population wipeout as well. And it's just a terrible time. What you get is something more akin to like the 1930s, the dirty 30s, they used to call it, you know, economic collapse, scarcity of food, and then this kind of pragmatism where they're like, well, we don't really want to worry about things like a space program like NASA. We're just going to focus in on producing food. We're going to be a caretaker generation, and then maybe future generations, if we can turn the corner, might be able to have, you know, university educations and things like that. So that's kind of like the beginning of the film. That's what you find, is this father with his two children and his own father. He's a widower, and he was a NASA pilot and an engineer, and now he's a farmer. And they stumble by kind of a strange coincidence, quotation marks around coincidence, some kind of external force, fortuitous thing, onto the coordinates of a secret NASA base that's planning this interstellar mission. And then him being a pilot with experience gets dragged into the story, but he has to make the hard decision of leaving his family behind to do it, and he promises to return.
There is a direct scriptural reference in the film. What is it? What role does it play?
The advanced mission that gets sent out before his mission was a mission called the Lazarus mission. So, like, it just gets mentioned, and then partway through his being shown around the NASA installation, you know, he says, well, why Lazarus? And Professor Brandt, who's played by Michael Caine, says, Lazarus came back from the dead. And that's the hope of their endeavor, that when they go out into space that they're going to be able to do that, right, to bring humanity back from the brink of death. And then the central character, Cooper, played by Matthew McConaughey, says, yes, but he had to die first. So that really kind of sets the stage. And when you watch the whole film, you see how that fits in with his storyline, too. It's pretty interesting.
The other theme that it deals with, and it's connected to evil and love, is selfishness and selflessness. There's really no great story without self-sacrifice. Does Interstellar depict it well?
Oh, it does. It does a really good job of putting that in there. And there is the classic moment that you see over and over and over and over and over again in all sorts of movies where a character does that act, where they do the thing that needs getting done. But Professor Brandt's daughter, who is played by Anne Hathaway, she's the one who also talked about evil. She mentions a thing about love. She says, love is one thing that transcends time and space. It's presented, and both evil and love are kind of presented as things that are kind of unusual or unquantifiable or difficult to pin down using materialistic scientific like a worldview that's scientifically materialistic. They're a puzzle, and they're presented like that, and they run against the grain of rational understanding in a lot of times, in a lot of spots. Sometimes they make sense, sometimes they don't. So the movie kind of has these engineers and scientists and people like that who aren't overtly religious kind of grappling with that, because that's part of being a human, are these things.
Also, you say it deals in particular, the kind of what drives, at least in part, drives the plot forward, is, we would say as Lutherans, an issue of the Eighth Commandment, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, truth and lies. Talk about that, if you would, Ted.
Well, you know, the main character, Cooper, he promises something to his children, that he's going to come back. Well, he's going about as far away as you can go, right? And in order to come back, it's very difficult. So he's driven to try to make sure that what he's promised them won't turn out to be a lie. So everything he does is for the love of them and for their survival, but also to make good on his promise. So that's kind of an interesting element. And then there's a bunch of really kind of important moments, like bottlenecks, like where there's very few characters, and then those characters have to decide to tell things truthfully or not. And their particular survival is based on that. So then is telling a lie going to ensure the survival of everyone or just the survival of me as an individual? And that kind of question comes up over and over again. It's very high drama and creates like moments of extreme, intensity within the film in a really interesting way.
Now, you say, just as kind of to talk about the genre a little bit, you say that this isn't, while it has that emotional intensity, this isn't what do you call like a sci-fi opera. This is not, say, Star Wars, a saga, so to speak. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, this is more in the realm of hard science. So you get things in Star Trek and Star Wars that are, you know, kind of genre-specific, like things that aren't really that likely. Like, they're really trying to focus in on the more likely kind of things that, like, actual scientists right now are working on and theorizing and thinking about. So there's that. That definitely makes it different. The other thing is that it's very pared down. Like, the characterization isn't super flashy. You know, you don't have, like, a Han Solo-type character. There's not a lot of swagger for these people. You know, like, these guys are not like Captain Kirk or even like Spock. Like, they're really trying in the writing itself to make them more like you and I, like just kind of regular people that we deal with every day. So like that's kind of a part of the movie itself too, which gives it a different feel overall, and maybe puts it more into categories like the Andromeda Strain from 1971 or A Space Odyssey, that 2001 A Space Odyssey, 1968. That's kind of more like what you're getting with this film, and less like Star Wars or Star Trek or something like that.
You also say that the film struggles with the question of whether or not information, a message, so to speak, can not only go from past to present into the future, which it obviously does, but whether it can come back the other direction. And you say there's perhaps a way a Christian might relate to that question. What is it?
Yeah, when it comes to that, that's like a kind of like one of the kind of mysteries of the movie. It's like they get warned, but who's warning them? Where is it coming from? How does it work? Like a Christian, we're okay with the idea of divine intervention coming in the form of prophetic words that show up in Scripture, right? We like things that point forward to events that are coming, and that comes to us from outside of our time. We're okay with that. Science has a hard time with the idea of information running the opposite direction. Running from past to present to future is fine. That's books, or today we've got audio recordings and digital recordings and video recordings and digital data. That stuff all runs from the past into the present to the future. But, you know, the question is, how does it work going the other direction? Is it even possible? That's a question in the movie itself, too, which is kind of an interesting one, to which Christians have a response. Like, we think it's possible. We look to a divine being, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, God, doing that. So that's kind of an interesting element from a Christian point of view when looking at it, when thinking about that question that the movie poses.
Is it a difficult film to follow? I take it that you do say in your review that you kind of have to pay attention to this one and not be a passive viewer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real economy of storytelling. Like, you don't have red herrings. So when you run across things in the plot of the story, the unfolding drama, they're there for a reason. And if something seems really out of place, it's probably going to come back again later. So this is not unfamiliar. You know, like if you're watching a mystery movie about a whodunit and there's some kind of weird, quirky thing at the beginning, often that, you know, has something to do with the end of the movie. That's kind of common. But, you know, like just kind of be watching as you go through. Pay close attention, because if you just kind of float along for the first 45 minutes and then start getting engaged, you know, you could get blindsided by the end of this movie and not really get what's going on. So it's just one of those movies where, you know, you really have to actually kind of devote your attention to what you're looking at.
Finally, you say a question that a Christian viewer might find interesting that's grappled with in the film Interstellar is, how does one respond when faced with death or the death of a family or of friends? In what way does the film deal with that without giving too much away?
Well, they use a piece of poetry that's pretty familiar to a lot of people. It's this Dylan Thomas poem called "Do Not Go Gently Into That Good Night." And it really shows up all over the place. It shows up, you know, in like Rodney Dangerfield comedy, you know, Back to School. And it shows up in, Bill Pullman as the President of the United States, you know, in one of those big kind of sci-fi epics. He also, you know, uses it, you know, at one point, kind of, it's... The poem itself is just a way of dealing with the idea of a coming death. Like, death is on the horizon. It's on the horizon for all of us. And it's like the event horizon of a black hole. We can't see past it. We, you know, as Christians, we have divine revelation, but like everyone, just, they can't see quite past it. Well, what the movie's doing is it even has a spaceship called The Endurance is the name of the spaceship. And the idea is, in the face of death, as you're coming up against it, you know, how are you going to approach that? And the poem is one where the approach is, don't give up, don't give in, keep fighting right through to the end. Like, be full of endurance, like run the race, like St. Paul would say. You know, like this is the thing that the movie throws out there. So there is this kind of poetic use of this in the movie, because really, again, theoretical physics doesn't make for good drama until you've added in a way to bridge into it. So facing these big mathematical questions in the universe, you know, from a individual's point of view, they use that as a way to do it. And in that way, it's a very life-affirming film, the fact that, you know, like, really there's... no reason to give up in the face of death, and to value life enough to keep fighting right through to the very end, even if you don't know what's coming.
You can read Pastor Ted Giese's review of the movie Interstellar at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks for being our guest.
You're welcome. Thanks.
When we come back, we're going to go back in time, so to speak, to the 6th century, to one of the last emperors of an empire. He's trying to hold both church and empire together. He is a 6th century Christian ruler. He's a confessor of Christ. His name is Justinian. Pastor Will Wheaton will be our guest right after this to talk about him.
And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Oh Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana at issuesetc.org. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel, live weekday mornings 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific. issuesetc.org.
Comfort, comfort, ye my people, for unto us a child is born, good news of great joy, the titles of Christ, the Magnificat. These are some of the Christmas card themes produced by Ad Crucem. Send a greeting card this Christmas season that's centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ. adcrusum.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. Adcrusum.com. ADCRUCEM.com.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
How would you like to receive Martin Luther's A Simple Way to Pray, signed by its translator, Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? Everyone who records their answer to the question, Issues, Etc., What Does This Mean?, by Friday morning, November the 14th, will receive an autographed copy of A Simple Way to Pray. The listener with the best recording will also win two Concordia commentaries, Galatians and Romans 1 through 8. Leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues, Etc. comment line by Friday morning, November the 14th at 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. 618-223-8382. Issues, Etc. What does this mean? 618-223-8382.